is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, March 19, 2020. I'm Buster Olney here in my home studio, and Taylor Schwenk is producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut. The situation gets tougher every day nationally, and we feel for the people hurting. A special shout out today to the first responders, medical professionals, doctors and nurses who are on the front lines fighting the coronavirus every day. This is a baseball podcast, and our goal here is to just give a few minutes of respite every day. And along those lines, we hope you enjoyed the interview we posted yesterday with October hero David Freese, who was so incredibly detailed with his memories from Game 6 of the 2011 World Series. Today, we'll be talking about our favorite baseball books and movies with Boog Sciambi. And tomorrow, we'll have on former Yankees left-hander David Wells, who tells his backstory from the 98 Yankees, arguably the greatest team of all time, how he pitched a perfect game with a hangover and the sound of the biggest punch from one of the worst fights we've ever seen. But first, some news and notes. Major League Baseball is considering skipping its amateur draft this year and putting off the next international signing period as a way to preserve cash while games are affected by the new coronavirus. People with familiar with the discussions told the Associated Press. Talks between management and the Player Association also are ongoing about how to handle service time, which is going to be, you know, potentially an issue between the two sides, trying to figure out how to account for what happened in 2020. The Reds say a staffer on their training staff tested positive for coronavirus at their spring training complex in Goodyear, Arizona. The Diamondbacks will pay minor leaguers with a one-time payment. They're going to be getting one-time deposits of up to $1,500. Before we get to Boog Sciambi, I want to note during this time of social isolation, no games to watch, it's not just the Baseball Tonight podcast that's still churning out content for you. ESPN Podcast is adapting to this new normal, and honestly, the entire roster is thriving under these circumstances. Just this week, there have been new episodes of ESPN Daily, The Woj Pod, The Hoop Collective, The Meanie Kime Show, The Right Time with Bomani Jones, and Maddie and the Caddy. And you can listen to all of these and more wherever you get your podcasts.
The man.
Swing and a high fly ball out towards left field.
The voice.
That one well struck. On its way. Out of here.
The legend.
And this place is going bananas.
Boog Sciambi on Baseball Tonight.
That would be Boog Sciambi, the legend, who has a fantastic voice as it stands, but especially Boog when it's a little overmodulated, right?
A little over, yeah, that's right. That's the way we like it. I paid a little extra for that. So every once in a while, overmodulated, and yeah, I like, and you know, because this place is going bananas.
That's exactly right. How are you holding up during this unusual, awful time?
Yeah, I'm hanging in there, man. You know, just trying to stay connected with people. You know, just with calls and FaceTime. I mean, certainly. You know, look, we miss sports, but I'm, you know, this is, it'll be back, you know, at some point. We know that. I'm hanging in there, man. I'm more than okay.
And you and I are lucky we get to talk about sports. We got to keep everything in perspective. And just as an example of that, I wanted to play this for you. An 18-year-old named Allie Hengelein, and I hope I pronounced that right, tweeted at the Mets yesterday about her grandmother, Kathleen, who's been a diehard Mets fan her entire life and was recently diagnosed with cancer. The Mets arranged to have Pete Alonso FaceTime her and Luis Rojas, their new manager, give her a call. Give a listen to this.
And I just wanted to say that for me, it's I wish baseball was going on right now. It's tough without it going on, and it's affecting all of us, and life's not the same without Mets baseball. But I hope that this coronavirus thing passes very, very soon, and we can get back to playing, and everything is all good in the world when Mets baseball's back. So I appreciate your lifelong support, and always let's go Mets.
Oh, let's go Mets. Oh my God!
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here.
Oh, you have no idea what this is doing for me. You have no idea.
We're thankful for all support. I mean, we're so much support, you know, to our fan base.
Oh God!
After we got the message and your tweet, and you know, we're we're praying. You guys are on our talk, you know, through all this great thing that she's doing right now.
Thank you.
And I wanted to reach out and,
oh my God, Evan, you have no idea. You just can't. I love you. You have no idea I love you guys.
For one of the worst.
Thank you so much. I'm going to cry. Hold on.
So, Boog, I always tell players that I'm amazed by their ability to, connect with fans and how fans are so moved by gestures like we saw by Pete and by Luis Rojas.
Yeah, the impact that you can make is pretty incredible. And it's one of those things that puts a smile on your face during, you know, a time like this. But there's no doubt that's the type of stuff that in some way, shape, or form, I think as fans of any sport, we can connect on that, you know, the impact as of, you know, what it was like. When I was a kid, I was a huge Eagles fan. And right after they lost the Super Bowl, I guess through a business contact, my grandfather ended up setting up a lunch with the Eagles tight end, Keith Kreftley. You know, Keith Kreftley was the guy that caught the Eagles' only touchdown that game. And I liked him as a player. But I mean, like, that was one of the greatest days of my life, going to lunch with Keith Kreftley, who was, you know, just the Eagles tight end. And there, you know, there are just so many, you know, there are a million different stories people have, but players in every sport have the ability to make an impact. And I mean, you know, Pete Alonso, Luis Rojas, that's impressive stuff.
So earlier in the week, we started to get a lot of feedback on social media, people asking for recommendations on books and movies and other baseball lists, you know, maybe some games they could watch. So that's when I reached out to you, because I know you and I both have very strong opinions. Would you agree? Like, you,
yeah,
and I are among the most opinionated people in baseball. Yes.
I mean, I have some opinions. I have some opinions. I'm a garbage bag, and I have some opinions. So
this is perfect for you then, because the way we're going to do the top 10 movies, I got my list here, and I'm going to give you the opportunity to tear it apart and tear me apart. Okay. So,
yeah, you bet.
And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to count down from 10 and then work backwards so that you can sit there and go, wait, we're at number 6 and you haven't mentioned so-and-so. So that's how I'll do it. Okay. At number 10, I got Cobb. I really like that movie. Tommy Lee Jones playing Ty Cobb. It was a kind of a crazy movie, but I enjoyed that. Would you consider that for your top 10?
Never seen it.
Wow. I can't believe you haven't. Tommy Lee Jones playing Ty Cobb. What are you doing?
I don't know what to tell you. No Tommy Lee Jones in The Fugitive, by the way. Continue.
Number 9, I got Field of Dreams. Okay. I'm not as enamored of Field of Dreams as some people, but it's a great baseball movie. What do you think?
I'm a sap. I love it. I probably would have it higher, not a ton higher, but a little higher.
All right. 8, I've got The Natural. Got to be in there. Yes.
Yeah. It's a comic book. It's wonderful. It's love that movie.
Okay. 7, Major League, which to me, I love that because it's closer to reality than some of the comic books.
Major League's great. I'm liking your list so far.
All right. Now at number 6, and I kind of feel like that this,
here
I
we
should
go.
This higher.
Here we go.
Okay. I think this one should be higher, but I couldn't work it up higher. 8 Men Out.
Yeah.
About the Black Sox team. What'd you think of that one?
I love that movie. There's so many, you know, so many great character actors who appear in that movie. And there's a lot of really good actors in that movie. And I just thought it was well told. I know that there's, you know, some people that would, you know, pick at the accuracy in spots, but I thought they told the story well. I really liked that movie a lot.
And you mentioned the character actors. I remember reading at the time that John Cusack, who wound up playing Buck Weaver in the movie, the yep. third baseman for the Black Sox. He basically told him, whatever, I'm in the movie. You tell me, I'll do anything that I can do to be in the movie, I'll do it. Because he's such a big yeah. baseball fan, and because he loved being a part of that.
Yeah, I'm gonna go full on Rick Sutcliffe in the off season and show you that I'm in name dropper mode. But I walked to meet Sut after, I think it was the 2015, yeah, when the Mets swept the Cubs. And I want to say it was after game 3 at Wrigley. Would it have been game
4?
2, whichever one it was. But I went down to just say hi to Sut. And I noticed Kevin Youkilis there. So I walked over to say what's up to Youk. And then I turned and realized, and then I got introduced. John Cusack was standing to my right and Eddie Vedder was standing to my left. Yeah, it was cool.
You know what's amazing about that, Boog, and what I'm going to say to you now is 100% true. I was in the room when that happened. I saw that, and Sut introduced all of you, and he didn't introduce me. And I was really jealous of you getting introduced to John Cusack and Eddie Vedder.
Oh, man. Okay, yeah, so we'll have to talk to Sut about that. He owes you all that.
I wouldn't have had this movie this high, but then last year when I had this conversation with Jessica Mendoza, I realized, you know what, I got to adjust my list. A League of Their Own at number 5. What do you think?
I think maybe a little too high, but I also would say, like, the Tom Hanks performance in that
yes.
is so good. And Gina Davis is great. So it's a good movie.
Number 4, I had a connection with. I'll do a little name dropping here. It's the movie 61. It's of course around Roger Maris and Mickey Mantle and their home run chase in 1961. It was produced by Billy Crystal, and during that process he was around Yankee Stadium, he was around the team. And there were a couple moments when he was kind of a pain for the writers because he would inject himself into interviews. And so I kind of wanted the movie to be not so good. And I thought it wouldn't be. I thought Billy Crystal would be kind of a fanboy on his favorite player, Mickey Mantle. It was terrific, Book. Like, it was real about what Mickey Mantle went through, at which part of the reason why I liked it so much. What'd you think?
Yeah, I thought they did a really good job of documenting the Maris Mantle relationship.
Yep.
I know Barry Pepper was one of the actors in it. I can't remember the other guy's name, the guy who played Mantle. Good movie. I would say underrated. Like, you have it high, but I really like the movie. So I haven't seen it in a while, but I've probably seen it twice, I would say.
Yeah, that actor's name, I looked it up. Thomas Jane played Mickey Mantle. Yeah, he was terrific. Barry Pepper was terrific as Roger Maris. And again, I went into it thinking, you know, this is going to be kind of romantic, but it wasn't at all. It was absolutely defined everything that Mantle was going through during the course of his career, his problems with drinking. Number 3, Pride of the Yankees, Gary Cooper playing Lou Gehrig. What'd you think?
I've seen it once, and the baseball in it was kind of stinky, and it's a great story. I mean, and it's personal for me. So and Gary Cooper's in it. So what, the story is it's a classic. So the story is obviously, you know, it's a hard watch for me, I guess. It is probably because of my personal connection to Lou Gehrig's disease. So, but it's, I get you.
Number 2, and when I did a list previously on the podcast a few years ago with Adnan Burke, I had this movie at number 1, but it's down to number 2. I got Bull Durham, which, again, I love the honesty of it. And it was a movie, I think, that really resonated with players. What'd you think?
It's a great movie. I'm going to steal a lot. I will say this. I think it was Greg. I'm stealing this line from Greg Zahn. And so it's a great movie. It's great storytelling. And I'm about to curse. So can you bleep that out? So
Chandler and Texas Studios, can you bleep out stuff?
Oh, yeah. Go for it, Boog. Let it fly.
Greg Zahn, former big league catcher, said, I'm paraphrasing, but this is the point. I love Bull Durham. Great movie. The problem I have with Bull Durham is that it made it seem like the minor leagues are more fun than the major leagues, and that's a bunch of bullshit. Because it's not that fun. I mean, look, great storytelling, but it's a line that's always stuck with me. It's just like, hey, this is awesome. Yeah, you're getting your $8 a day meal money and riding on a bus that barely works, and you're cramped, you know, like, not that fun. You weren't having that much fun. But it's really great. And, the baseball component and Costner, you know, looks like he can play. And there was just, I mean, look, that movie resonates in terms of the lines, the meeting on the mound.
Yeah.
Candlesticks would make a nice gift. Maybe find out where she's registered and get him a play setting. And, okay, let's get to it.
Oh, it's fantastic. And I was covering the AAA Nashville Sounds at the time that movie came out. And so you could, for me anyway, at that time, I could directly relate some of the characters to some of the players that I was covering. And number one for me, and I, as time goes on, I appreciate this movie more and more. And I love the honesty of it. It was 42. And it's of course about Jackie Robinson and breaking into professional baseball, his first year in the big leagues with the Brooklyn Dodgers. I mentioned the honesty of it. It had an unflinching presentation of the racism that he faced, especially that scene where Ben Chapman, the manager of the Phillies, is screaming at him the worst things that you can imagine. And Boog, it was one where it made me uncomfortable to watch. And the director captured the discomfort of the Dodger players, his teammates, to listen to that, over and over and over, and all the things that that Ben Chapman was yelling at him. I thought that was absolutely at the heart of the movie, which I loved. What'd you think of 42?
Yeah, phenomenal. Really well done, really well executed, and told that story. Yeah, it told that story really, really well. Let me ask you this. You can only pick one. You've shared that list with people. If there's one movie that's not on the list that surprises people or people give you a hard time for, what movie is it?
Oh, For the Love of the Game. I remember the last time. Oh, Sandlot. You know, the last time
Sandlot's
we did a top.
The one, Sandlot's the one that I was surprised isn't on the list. Yeah.
But when we did the thing with Adnan, I mentioned I had not seen Sandlot. This was just a couple of years ago. To that point, I had not watched Sandlot, but I made a point of watching Sandlot after we had a couple of the cast members come on the show. But that one, for you, would be in your top 10, yes?
Yeah, that would be in my top 10. There's no question.
All right. Well, it's a coming-of-age movie that came out right at the right time for you, yes?
Yeah, for sure. But it also struck a chord in terms of, you know, my version of the Sandlot growing up. You know, I grew up in an urban environment. So, you know, we have fields and I played Little League, but our pickup games were stick ball. We still use, you know, our aluminum bats and tennis balls, but it was, you know, we're surrounded by apartment buildings. So, first floor is a single, second floor is a double, third floor is a triple, fourth floor is a homer, stuff like that, you know?
That's awesome. All right, here's some books that I would recommend to people reading. First off, Lords of the Realm by John Helyar. It came out in the mid-90s. It is an incredible look at the beginning of baseball's labor relations. And that might sound really boring, but Boog, I think you back me up on this. There are so many great and funny stories about the beginning of free agency and the craziness of the owners involved and the fanboy nature of the owners. And on the other hand, you have this tremendous professional labor expert, Marvin Miller, basically running circles around them and setting up the financial system that we see today.
Yeah, I would sort of, it's funny. I read them both right around the same time, but Lords of the Realm and a whole different ball game. I'm looking at them right now. They're on my bookshelves, and they're like three books away from each other. But Marvin Miller's A Whole Different Ball Game, I think, is a must read. And I'm totally with you in terms of Lords of the Realm. Those two, I just think that they're important. But you did make. I don't. It's hard to. It's not an easy sell in both instances, and they're both highly entertaining.
Highly entertaining. the craziness of George Steinbrenner and Charlie Finley and Ted Turner, you know, who the former owner of the Atlanta Braves, the stories of how we got to where we are with free agency it was outstanding. It wasn't what I expected it to be, which is why I'm couching it the way that I am.
No doubt. Yeah, no question.
And I also would recommend, look, I love David Halberstam's work. I got to know him a little bit. Speaking of name dropping, he had some tremendous baseball books, Summer 49, October 64, The Teammates. Anything else that you'd like to mention, Boog?
I mean, Ball 4, I think, is one. Boys of Summer resonated with me.
Yes.
And then I will say at this point, I know that it's turned into a phrase, but I still think you'd have to say Moneyball is a pretty darn entertaining book. And I mean, I know we would have gotten there, but in terms of pushing us into, you know, more mainstream as it relates to analytics and all that stuff, I mean, that's the book. If you hear Michael Lewis being interviewed, baseball, you know, is tough in terms of making changes. But, you know, he put that book out there and he said he had people from all the other leagues calling him and asking about it. So I just think Moneyball is a book. You have to include it as something that's been impactful from a mainstream media coverage standpoint, from a literary standpoint. I understand. Look, Michael Lewis is a brilliant storyteller, period. And he tailored it the way he wanted to tailor it. And yeah, you know, Mulder, Hudson, and Zito were a big part of those A's teams winning. You can't deny it, but it still opened the door, you know, and gave us, or maybe, you know, opened a window into the way this one team was operating. And it taught a lot of people how this one team was thinking about it and how a segment of the population, small but now growing, views the game. I think it was a really entertaining book and a really important book.
Let me make this comparison for you, see if you agree with me. I feel the same way about the legacy of the book Moneyball that I do about the legacy of former Yankees owner George Steinbrenner. Steinbrenner was someone who changed the sport on a day-to-day basis. He actually was a greater threat to the stability of the Yankees than anything else. But big picture, he changed the way that organization thought. He changed professional sports. He was someone who loved the idea of the marquee value, but he was not necessarily a great executive in terms of running a team on a day-to-day basis. And I feel the same way about Moneyball, that yes, it changed the sport. Clearly, it inspired, as I refer to them, the spawn of Moneyball, all these kids who were 15, 16, 18 years old, or maybe already in college, to get into baseball. That is undeniable. There are parts of the book you read that you're like, okay, that's complete BS. Does that make sense?
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
All right. And real quick, before we move on, the best games you've ever seen, I asked you for that list. My three, number one would be Game 6, 2011 World Series. Number two, Game 6, 1975 World Series, Reds and Red Sox, 12 innings, Fisk walks it off. And number three for me would be Game 7, 2016 World Series. And I got to tell you, I was putting this list together, I was conflicted about Game 5, 2017, Dodgers and Astros, because of what we know now. There's no doubt that would have been in my top three before. Now I can't put it in there. All right, what's your list?
games that you were at or that you just at least watched, or do you even have to have seen it?
We're just sitting in lockdown mode, Boog. You can define that any way you want.
So I'll do it just the games that I've either seen in person or on TV. I will say that Game 7 of the 91 World Series and Game 7 of the 92 NLCS both really grabbed me. You know, I was at Game 7 of the 97 World Series, and that was pretty special with, you know, Renteria's single and Council coming in to score. Those two, you know, Braves Twins, Braves Pirates, the Francisco Cabrera single. But I can remember I was a class at BC, and I was just a baseball fan, and listening to the game on the radio, you know, with an earpiece, like old school style. 2011 at the World Series in Game 6 was pretty incredible. I do think that Astros game that you mentioned, the Astros-Dodgers World Series was a Game 5, would be up there. But yeah, those would be a few of them for me.
What about, I'm surprised you didn't jump on Game 7, 2016.
As a viewing experience, that absolutely would be top five. I will tell you that I just, for the heck of it, yes, that you're 100% right in terms of 2016. I will say that as a grouping, if you can do this, and again, with no dog in the fight, I just went to the games as a fan the last time that I really ever, you know, did this. And I was working as a broadcaster, but I was at Games 3, 4, and 5 of the 2004 ALCS. And I was with Red Sox fans. So to see them get pounded in Game 3, and then you had the rain out, and then eventually, you know, winning Game 4, I was on the monster for part of Game 5.
Wow.
That grouping of games was, I still would say that resonates with me. The Red Sox coming back from 3-0 as a story, I think it's as significant a story as we've had in the history of the game. I mean, I like that one, two rivals, even though you're talking about one team had, you know, the way better end of it. And for the Red Sox to finally end the curse against that team, to do a thing that no team had ever done before, I would say that the 2004 Red Sox winning probably resonates with me as much as anything.
Yeah. And it was the only time in baseball history, I believe, still professional sports history, right? In the United States, among the major sports leagues, that a team came back from 3-0.
It's happened in hockey, because I want to say the Islanders and the Penguins, it happened. But in baseball, it had never happened. And my one other personal one would be, it's funny we're doing this on Twitter, but the 80 Phillies were my favorite team. And I got a chance at the 98 World or All-Star game. I knew Darren Dalton because he was on the 97 Marlins. So he was there with Tug McGraw. And so he introduced me to Tug, and it was just at a bar. And so the night went on, and I got a little bit of liquid courage in me. And I went up to him and basically explained to him that was probably my favorite sports moment ever, with the Phillies winning in 1980, and how I was in my pajamas and jumping up and down on my mom's bed. And Tug just, like, stared at me stone-faced, and when I was done, he said, "Thanks a lot. That made me feel really old."
but I do give you credit for this. You're more courageous than I was when I got to meet Sandy Koufax. This is only a few years ago at Citi Field. He's my all-time favorite player. I got inspired to be my interest in baseball when I read a book about him when I was 8 years old. And I, all I had the courage to say was, you know, nice to meet you, Mr. Koufax. And that was it. And then I'm just shut up from that point forward.
It's fun. He came on. This is rare. I'm not even sure how we got him on, but it was a few years back. I want to say it was Jackie Robinson Day at Dodger Stadium, and he came on with me and Sut.
Wow.
And I don't know that there's been another player that made me more nervous. There's just something kind of, either get it or you don't. There's just something kind of regal about him, like regal, and you feel like you're sort of, he feels a little bit like, it's almost like Bigfoot a little bit too, where you don't really, you know, you don't, you know, it's not like he's all over the place. I know he goes to games, but he sat there and, I mean, I interviewed him, you know, that was pretty, pretty stunning.
Oh man. Yeah. Well, twice in one interview, you managed to make me feel less, you know, less worthy. That's for sure.
Oh.
You got John Cusack, you're interviewing Sandy Koufax, and I'm just sitting in the corner dribbled up.
You've seen a lot more than me, buddy. You've seen a lot more than me.
All right, Boogle. Great to talk with you. Thanks for doing this.
Stay safe, brother.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Thursday. Wow, it is. I'm losing track of the days here. First tweet up from Sanzier, at Sanzier. One of the big punishments in the Astros scandal was the loss of draft picks. If Major League Baseball skips the 2020 draft, what happens with that punishment? They already got off easy. Could the virus make it easier on them?
No, I don't think that they would allow them to miss out on that punishment. I think baseball, if they were to cancel this year's draft, I think they would apply that penalty to the 2021 draft.
Yeah, I can't imagine that they'd let him slide on that. The Starting Block Personal Journals at the Starting Block. Tomorrow is my first day of work from home for the next week. Any suggestions on which three Major League Baseball games I should listen to from the last decade on YouTube for day one whilst working? We covered a couple with Boog. Any more come to mind for you, Buster?
Yeah, boy, anything from the last day, like the Rays game that they played on the last day of the 2011 season. Which Evan Longoria won with a home run. That was the most amazing day of baseball that we've ever seen. So if you could just get that day, because it felt like about 1,000 things happened within a 40-minute span.
Yeah, and concurrently, you had the Orioles Red Sox going at it, and the Orioles won and knocked the Red Sox. That helped knock them out of playoff contention. So very exciting day indeed. Last one for today, Tom Evans at TEvans4 writes in, how will labor negotiations be affected by losing at least a chunk of the 2020 season to COVID-19? Seems like there is no way either side could go through with a strike or lockout at this point.
Tom, I totally agree with you. You know, it does remind me of that situation after 9/11, in the summer of 2002, the players, Major League Baseball, were negotiating their next collective bargaining agreement. It got contentious. There was disagreement. And basically the veteran players on the player side pushed that deal across the finish line because their feeling was we cannot go out on strike while this stuff is going on. And I feel like the same pressure is going to be in place, because no one's going to want to hear about a labor strike among fans with everything going on in this country now. That's for sure.
All righty. That does it for Bleacher Tweets for today. Don't forget, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. That is big time. We're going to keep trying to go 5 days a week, Buster. That's the plan, right?
Yeah, 100%. You know, and we have interviews lined up with various people. We have this one that we did the other day with David Wells, who tells great stories from the 1998 Yankees. I've never heard anybody describe a punch the way that he did, which the Yankees had this massive brawl with the Orioles on May 19th, 1998, and Boomer was right in the middle of it, and someone threw a punch that he can still hear in his mind from that fight. It was a great conversation. We'll have a lot of conversations as we move forward. I'm lining up interviews as we speak. That's it for today. My thanks to Boog Sciambi and Taylor Schwenk. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.